Consumer Reports, July 2019. Is your sunscreen safe? Smart summertime solutions. The FDA is bringing a new level of scrutiny to ingredients in sunscreens, but the jury is still out on what changes may result. So the best way to be protected, no matter what your skin tone, is to use CR's ratings to find the most effective products and to adopt other sun safety habits. By Sally Wadka. This season, there's some big news in the world of sunscreen. For the first time in 20 years, the Food and Drug Administration has proposed new ways for sunscreen to be regulated. If these rules, which include possible restrictions on the ingredients allowed in sunscreens, as well as on the types of products on the market, are enacted, it could affect how you choose to protect your skin. While none of these proposals have been finalized, they have ignited debates about the safety and effectiveness of sunscreens and the proper way to use them. Even if the various changes aren't eventually enacted, the FDA's proposal raises points that consumers need to be aware of, says Don Huber, Director of Product Safety at Consumer Reports. The FDA's updated rules aim to correct some issues that CR has previously expressed concerns about, such as the accuracy of a sunscreen's listed sun protection factor, SPF, and the safety of spray sunscreens. Shining a light on safety. The FDA's new proposal came as a result of the Sunscreen Innovation Act, passed by Congress in 2014. The act required a new process for evaluating the safety and effectiveness of sunscreens. The part of the plan that has generated the most buzz is the FDA's call for the sunscreen industry to provide more information on 12 common chemical active ingredients, including avobenzone, homosalate, octinoxate, oxalate, octocitrine, and oxybenzone. These can be absorbed through the skin, and some experts are concerned that the chemicals may lead to hormonal disruption, reproductive problems, and skin cancer. This request for additional data does not mean that the FDA has concluded that these 12 ingredients are unsafe, says Teresa Michelle, MD, Director of the Division of Non-Prescription Drug Products at the FDA. The goal here is to get the data and validate the safety and effectiveness of all these ingredients. The FDA has long classified these ingredients as generally recognized as safe and effective, parentheses, GRACE, a designation indicating that the ingredient doesn't need to be approved by the FDA to be used in a product. But the way consumers use sunscreen has changed over the years. People now use sunscreen more often, says Henry Lim, MD, a dermatologist at Henry Ford Hospital in Detroit, and former president of the American Academy of Dermatology. That raises the question of whether ingredients that were thought to be safe when used occasionally, once or twice a week at the beach or pool, for instance, could be harmful in longer daily use. Oxybenzone questions. Of the 12 chemical ingredients under review, oxybenzone is possibly the most concerning. Researchers have found detectable levels of oxybenzone in human blood and breast milk, and there is some evidence that it can harm coral reefs. But it might not be the only sunscreen ingredient to do so. One study, for example, found that the natural ingredient, zinc oxide, could cause coral damage as well. The American Academy of Pediatrics, AAP, advises parents to avoid using sunscreens with oxybenzone on children if possible. Studies in laboratory animals and other laboratory studies show that this chemical can mimic the action of hormones that naturally occur in the human body, says Sophie Balk, MD, an attending pediatrician at the Children's Hospital at Montefiore in the Bronx, New York, and a member of the AAP Council on Environmental Health. Still, none of this means oxybenzone has been found to be unsafe. We do know that the chemical is absorbed into the bloodstream, but we don't know exactly what, if any, effects it's having, says Stephen Q. Wang, MD, Director of Dermatology and Dermatological Surgery at Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center in Basking Ridge, New Jersey. This ingredient has been used in sunscreen for 40 years, Wang says. And he says that to date, no human studies have found evidence of harm. All of CR's recommended lotions and sprays contain oxybenzone for important reasons. Our ratings are based on a sunscreen's availability to filter out UVA and UVB rays and on how closely the tested SPF matches the SPF on the label, Huber says. Oxybenzone is a very good UVA filter, and it also helps to stabilize other active ingredients, so they remain effective longer than they would otherwise. Still, in our ratings, there are 13 oxybenzone-free sunscreens that, although not top scores, do provide very good overall protection. And we've highlighted them in our ratings. Should you go natural? If chemical ingredients are being scrutinized, you may think the solution is to switch to a natural sunscreen that contains only the mineral active ingredients titanium dioxide and zinc oxide. Indeed, the FDA isn't currently questioning the safety and effectiveness of these ingredients, but in CR's testing, mineral sunscreens consistently underperform. None of the 17 mineral sunscreens in our current ratings scored high enough to receive a recommended designation from CR or even to get an overall score of very good. We think you will get the best sun protection by choosing one of our high-scoring products, Huber says. However, for those who want to use a mineral sunscreen, our tests show that California Kids, hashtag supersensitive lotion, SPF 30+, Badger Active Natural Mineral Cream, SPF 30, unscented, and Goddess Garden Everyday Natural Lotion, SPF 30, offer some protection, although not as much as our top-rated products. Other protective strategies. Despite the FDA's concern about sunscreen ingredients, one thing is clear. It's absolutely vital that you continue to use sunscreen when heading outside. There is overwhelming evidence that sunscreen protects against skin cancer and other harmful effects of the sun, so consumers need to continue to use it while scientists do more research on the safety of its ingredients, Huber says. One way to minimize any potential problem with oxybenzone for any other sunscreen or any other sunscreen ingredient is to cover up. Something everyone should be doing anyway. Your sun protection plan should never be just about sunscreen, says Mona Gohara, MD, Associate Clinical Professor of Dermatology at the Yale School of Medicine in New Haven, Connecticut. Even if you apply enough, 1 ounce or a shot glass full, to cover your entire body, and reapply consistently every 2 hours or right after you get out of the water, no sunscreen blocks 100% of ultraviolet rays. In covering up, wearing long sleeves and a hat, for instance, leaves fewer exposed areas to apply sunscreen, so you use less. Along with seeking the shade and staying out of the sun during peak hours, It's a good, healthy practice. Saving face. Sunscreens labeled as being for your face protect your skin exactly the same way, with the same active ingredients as sunscreens for the body do. But these products are formulated to suit those with special facial skin concerns. For example, many are oil-free, which is to help those with oily or acne-prone complexions. Oil-free products are also usually lighter, which allows them to be used under makeup without feeling greasy. In addition, facial sunscreens often have no fragrance or just a light scent. Fragrances are one of the major causes of skin irritation, so that's a plus if you have sensitive skin. But whether you use a face sunscreen or a body sunscreen or a moisturizer with SPF, you need to follow these tips to make sure you're fully covered. Use enough. A fingertip-sized blob won't do. You need a teaspoon-sized blob to properly cover your face and neck. Don't count on moisturizers or makeup with SPF. You probably don't apply enough of either to protect your skin. In a new study published in the journal Plus One, study participants who used SPF moisturizer were more likely to miss areas around the eyes, a common site for skin cancer, than when they used a regular sunscreen. As for makeup, it's almost impossible to use enough to get effective coverage for SPF foundation without looking like you've applied a mask. People don't apply foundation evenly, they don't apply it everywhere, and they don't apply enough for it to be adequate protection on its own, says Jean Downey, MD, a dermatologist and an assistant attending physician at Mountainside Hospital in Mount Clair, New Jersey, and Overlook Hospital in Summit, New Jersey. Also worth noting, SPF isn't cumulative. Using an SPF 15 foundation on top of an SPF 15 moisturizer does not add up to SPF 30. Reapply. Sunscreens need to be reapplied every 2 hours to continue to be effective. Even if you're just sitting in your office all morning, it's inactive in a couple of hours, says Macrine Alexandrades, MD, PhD, an associate clinical professor of dermatology at the Yale School of Medicine in New Haven, Connecticut. So reapply before heading out at lunch. If you don't want to mess up your makeup, keep a wide-brimmed hat at your desk and put it on before you go outside. The sunscreen of the future. If the Food and Drug Administration proposed sunscreen rules take effect, consumers will see some changes on labels and in the types of products available. Here is what is under consideration. SPF claims will be capped at 60 plus. Sunscreens will have an SPF of 75 to 100, may lead consumers to think that they can stay in the sun longer or they don't need to reapply. But the FDA says there is no data showing that SPFs higher than 60 are more protective. In addition, sunscreens would not be able to be formulated with an SPF higher than 80. Sunscreens between SPF 61 and SPF 80 wouldn't be able to use the higher number on the label. All would just be labeled SPF 60 plus. Some experts think that the higher SPFs help to compensate for user error. People don't apply the same amount of sunscreen that's used when companies are testing the SPF, says Henry Lim, MD, a dermatologist at Henry Ford Hospital in Detroit. That means a product labeled SPF 30 might deliver only SPF 15. Still, SPF 60 plus should be enough to overcome less than ideal user application. New tests will be required. Under the FDA's proposal, sunscreen manufacturers will have to give their sunscreens the lowest SPF their tests show within a range. For example, a sunscreen that tests between 40 and 49 would be required to be labeled SPF 40. In CR's tests, many sunscreens fell short of their advertised SPF. We strongly support this part of the proposal because it would help cut down on the times when manufacturers promise more protection than they can deliver. In addition, the requirements for labeling on sunscreen broad spectrum, which means the product protects against ultraviolet, A and B rays, will be strengthened. Even among products that qualify as broad spectrum by the FDA's current standards, the actual level of UVA protection varies greatly. That's why CR rates a sunscreen level of UVA protection. The problem is that as the SPF of a product goes up, it's not a given that the UVA coverage also increases, says CR's Dan Huber. Indeed, under current FDA rules, you could have a broad spectrum SPF 15 with better UVA coverage than a broad spectrum SPF 30. Certain product types could be eliminated. If the proposed changes take effect, certain forms of sunscreen products will no longer be available. These include SPF wipes, towelettes, body washes, and shampoos, and possibly sunscreen insect repellent combinations. Because sunscreen needs to be applied and reapplied liberally, using a combo product could expose you to too much of the active ingredient in the insect repellent, or the interaction of sunscreen active ingredients with repellent active ingredients could enhance the absorption of one or both. Sunscreen sprays and powders will also come under more scrutiny. Sprays can be flammable until they dry, and the FDA is proposing that manufacturers test the drying time and label products accordingly. Sprays would also be subject to new restrictions on the size of the particles in them to help to minimize the risk of inhalation. For this reason, CR has recommended not using spray sunscreens on kids unless no other product is available, Huber says. Powdered sunscreens will face similar restrictions on particle size, and the FDA is asking for more data on their safety and their effectiveness. How to speak sunscreen. The language on labels can be hard to decipher, but to ensure the best sun protection, it's important to know exactly what you're getting. Much of what you see on the label is marketing, which can make it difficult to decode what's truly meaningful. Here are some of the most common terms on your sunscreen label and what they mean. SPF. This stands for Sun Protection Factor. It measures only how well the sunscreen protects from UVB rays, the ones primarily responsible for sunburn. SPF 15 blocks 93% of UVB rays. SPF 30 blocks 97% and SPF 50 blocks 98%. Broad spectrum. Seeing this term, which is regulated by the FDA, on the label means the product contains ingredients that help to shield the sun from ultraviolet A and ultraviolet B rays. UVA rays accelerate age-related skin damage and largely contribute to the risk of melanoma, the deadliest form of skin cancer. Water resistant. According to FDA standards, this means the sunscreen has been tested and will maintain its SPF level for 40 minutes while swimming or sweating. Very water resistant means it maintains its SPF level for 80 minutes. However, you still need to reapply sunscreen when you get out of the water. Protects against aging and skin cancer. This is not a regulated term, but it's safe to say that if used properly, any broad-spectrum sunscreen with an SPF 30 or higher will help to protect you from skin aging and skin cancer. Proper use involves applying enough sunscreen, a teaspoon per body part, such as the torso or a leg, reapplying every 2 hours that you're in the sun and using it in combination with other sun protection measures. Sport. You'll find this is on products marketed to people who want a sunscreen that stays put during vigorous outdoor activity. The term isn't regulated by the FDA. Baby or kid. There are dozens of sunscreens that manufacturers say are designed to just be used for babies and kids, but there is no FDA regulations that govern who can use these terms and how. You'll often see this label on sunscreens designed to be less irritating to young skin by virtue of containing only mineral active ingredients, zinc oxide, and titanium dioxide. Lastly, dermatologist tested or approved. This is a marketing term that is unregulated and mostly meaningless. A dermatologist may have been consulted about this product or tried, but there's no way for the consumer to know what, if any, kind of testing was performed. Ratings. Pick your protection. The lotions in our ratings contain either chemical or mineral active ingredients. The sprays and sticks contain chemical active ingredients. La Roche-Posay Anthelios 60 Melt-In Sunscreen Milk. Overall score 100. Pricing $36. And that translates to $7.20 per ounce. For 5 ounces. It protects against UVA, SPF, and variation from SPF. Second is Bullfrog Land Sport Quick Gel SPF 50 with an overall score of 95. Pricing is $13, $2.50 per ounce. Package is 5 ounces. The test included excellent scores in the UVA protection, SPF, and variation from SPF. Third is Coppertone Ultra Guard Lotion SPF 70 with an overall score of 94. The pricing is $8, which translates to $1 per ounce for an 8-ounce size package. It got an excellent in UVA protection, excellent in SPF, and a very good in variation from SPF. Fourth is Equate, Walmart's Ultra Lotion SPF 50 with a score of 94, and the price is $7 per package, which translates to 44 cents per ounce for a 16-ounce package. It got an excellent in UVA protection, a very good in SPF, and a very good in variation from SPF. And in fifth is Coppertone Defend and Care Ultra Hydrate Lotion SPF 50 with a score of 79, $14 per package per 6 ounces, translating to $2.25 per ounce. It got an excellent in UVA protection, a very good in SPF, and a very good in variation from SPF. Smart Summertime Solutions. What's wrong with this picture? An ever-widening territory of our green spaces is infested with an exploding tick population that's spreading a host of diseases. Learn how to protect yourself with our expert advice and our newest insect repellent ratings by Kevin Loria. After spending mornings exploring the fields, forests, and gardens of their outdoor classroom just north of New York City, the students and teachers at Little Leaf at Andresen on Hudson Nature School perform an essential task, the tick check. The preschoolers sit in a circle on the ground and sing a song about ticks. Tick, are you in my armpit? Tick, are you in my ear? While teachers inspect them one by one, examining their hair and checking behind their knees. They're looking for deer ticks, which can spread Lyme disease and other illnesses, and are sometimes as small as a poppy seed. Parents are also encouraged to apply insect repellent to their children before school and do another tick check after school. For added protection, Teresa McCaffrey, the Little Leaves founder and director, had the perimeter of the garden classroom sprayed with the pesticide permethrin. All of that might seem like an awful lot of work for a day outside in a grassy suburb, but for millions of Americans, it has become a necessity of daily life. Disease-carrying ticks, found in all 50 states, have significantly increased their geographical range in the past 15 years, showing up in new places nearly every year and multiplying quickly. A Long Island entomologist recalled finding 250 ticks on a single bush. Last year, a report for the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, CDC, showed that the number of tick-borne diseases more than doubled between 2004 and 2016. Scientists are testing new approaches that may help curb the explosion of tick-borne illnesses, such as Lyme disease and babesiosis. But there are no large-scale tick control solutions demonstrated to work, according to Richard Olsted, Ph.D., a disease ecologist at the Cary Institute of Ecosystem Studies. In the meantime, people are left to protect themselves against the serious threat of disease, using the same precautions taken at the Little Leaf School. Thomas Mather, Ph.D., director of University of Rhode Island Center for Vector-Borne Diseases, has been studying ticks since 1983. He's known as the tick guy and says that over the years, he may have collected more black-legged ticks than anyone. The recent rise in tick population is something Mather has observed in firsthand. If people could just see what I'm seeing, he says, they would never go outside.